Well, hello, students and listeners, and welcome to our third podcast in Spirit Radio Hour. And today I'm here with Chuck. And I think, hello, Chuck. Those of you who practice yoga at Spirit know Chuck because you have been teaching that for 8 years with us, something like that.
I don't know if it's quite that long, but well, teacher training, the first one I think we finished in 14.
13.
Yeah. That's when we finished? Okay. Yeah. I can't even keep track anymore.
I know.
And I jumped right into internship and then taught with Susie for a good long time. And then before you released me on my own.
Yeah. Well, and it's been a lovely partnership. So thank you so much.
Agreed. Thank you.
And thank you for being on a broadcast today. I know we want to talk about teenagers and yoga and raising kids since you are.
Sure.
But before we dive into that, just a little bit for the listeners, talk about how long you've been practicing yoga and really what inspired you to start to begin with.
Let's see. So I've been practicing, I don't know the exact time, but it's been about 16 years. Cause I actually remember, I actually was getting into a fairly regular practice around the time my youngest was born, and she's 16 and a half. So I kind of rewind from that. That's, you know, those mental milestones,
yeah,
and those things that you kind of, you know, the markers in time. So that's something that sticks with me most. But yeah. And I actually, I was pretty consistent for a while and I kind of dropped off. I was doing a little bit more running and things like that. But then a friend of mine introduced me, or one of my, a colleague who lived in the neighborhood had mentioned Spirit going, and he actually said, hey, you should go check it out. And so, and that was very close, very soon after you opened.
Yeah.
And then I was pretty consistent after that. And so there was a little bit of a lull in there, but yeah, no, once I found my Spirit home, like I pretty consistent. So
that's
been a
awesome.
Good place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it about yoga that you like? I mean, it's not a secret that yoga is dominated by females, and it is also not a secret that I think it would be so beneficial to break it out of that mold. So I
right.
kind of would like to talk to you just a little bit about, you know, how that helps you.
Well, I think in thinking about why, I mean, for me personally, it's something that I feel like I do forever. So, you know, I've done a lot of different things. I've done spin classes. I've did CrossFit for a while. I was a runner for a long time. I kind of look at it as something that will always be my home base. You know, having a hip replacement a couple of years ago, that kind of showed me that I'm getting older and yeah. Not as invincible as I might want to be. So I always look at the practice as something that I will be able to do for a long time. And because there's no like real, it's just like, it's not a benchmark. It's not a competition. It's not something, you know, my physical ability may wane over time, essentially, just because I'm getting older and all that other good stuff. But the practice doesn't have to step back. And I think that was when I, in teacher training, one of the lessons that I tell people is that coming into teacher training, I always had this philosophy that said, if I could do it yesterday, then I should be able to do it today and tomorrow. You know, I should be always kind of getting better. And my practice actually took a quantum leap when I realized through teacher training that that wasn't the case. There were days when I wasn't going to feel it, or my body wasn't going to be into it, or this particular pose just wasn't going to work for my practice on that particular day. And when I gave myself permission to step back, my practice actually got better. I felt more comfortable in it, and I actually felt more powerful in it. So, so that's really why I consider yoga my home base, is that, you know, I'm confident that I will be able to do it forever.
Thank you for sharing that, because that is such an important part of yoga. And it's also so counterintuitive coming from our culture, right? That if I give myself space and I don't always do to A+ everything that I think I should, then actually you do it's not only that you can do it long, but you physically get stronger over a long time. You know, like it will ebb and flow, but over a long time, you actually benefit more. And it's pretty awesome. So before we get sidetracked in that discussion, I really want us to bring us back to raising teenagers and being a dad, and maybe even how yoga helped a little bit with that.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So, well, I've got two teenagers. So Celia is 18. She's a freshman in college. And then I have Cypress, who's 16, and she's a sophomore. I wrote an essay for a nonprofit that my wife and I are involved with. And I was asked, so it's like, well, you know, what worked for you? Because the nonprofit is specifically involved in helping parents of younger children. And I kind of boiled it down into a couple of things that I think about. I'm going to say the disclaimer. I am raising two cisgendered girls, and so I don't know everything. I mean, and we're very, very fortunate in the fact that, you know, we've been able to give them the resources to be able to thrive. And I just feel very, very, very lucky. And so whatever I'm going to say is not prescriptive. It's just, your results may vary. You know, we haven't had a lot of the challenges with regards to identity or stress or, you know, drugs or anything. We've been, knock on wood, just really, really lucky. So like I said, I don't want this to come across as anything that is like, oh, I raised two wonderful daughters and I know everything. So I don't. I've screwed up a lot. A lot. So that's that. That's the first thing that I will say. But we're very lucky. I mean, they're lovely kids. Excited. I'm going to see our youngest at college next week to go fly across the country to go see her. We really miss her. It's just, you know, we're just very, very blessed. So I'll kick it off at that.
Yeah. I know this past year has been particularly difficult, you know, because all of a sudden a lot of parents found themselves to be teachers at home and juggling a lot of things.
Yeah.
What can you say about that? What has been difficult, especially in regards to teens this past year? And maybe, you know, helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll say I think, me personally, I relate better to teenagers than others. I've got some nephews, and I actually feel really bad because they're between the ages of 4 and 6, and family get-togethers. I'm just like, oh, okay, that's nice. I actually really don't have the patience, and so I really feel for anybody in this situation where they're trying to, you know, especially younger children, having them at home, doing homeschooling, teaching them, you know, trying to get them focused on Zoom or whatever it is that they're going to be doing. I feel really lucky. But teenagers can be tricky. I mean, I think, you know, two of the big things that I kind of think about is, you know, they're definitely asserting their independence. You know, I kind of have this phrase that says, if it's mom and dad's idea, then it's a bad one. And sometimes you kind of have to keep presenting the same thing in a little bit different way. And then they finally come around to the thing. It's like, oh yeah, that actually makes some sense. But they need to find that on their own first. So that's kind of the first thing. The second thing is that I kind of have this notion that the stakes are always a lot higher. You know, when they're toddlers or infants, I mean, you're just kind of, you're around them all the time. I mean, it's really hard for them to get into too much trouble. But then they start driving. And next thing you know, you're throwing in the keys to a 4,000-pound car that can go 60 miles an hour with other 4,000-pound cars that go 60 miles an hour on the same road. And hopefully everybody's going the same direction. But it's just, it may not always be the case.
It's statistically the most dangerous thing that we do.
Exactly.
Even including COVID, you know?
So that's the other thing, is that the stakes are higher, and how it pertains to the pandemic. So on that notion, actually, they've been home, so it's really been kind of easy. Sending one off to college in the middle of a pandemic, you know, was kind of the opposite. And you just kind of have to trust the system. You know, I think, knock on wood, and Celia in particular, I mean, she's a little bit more introverted. And so, you know, it's like, oh, you mean we can't go out and party on campus? Oh, you know, she's not going to miss it at all. And so, you know, she's kind of nose to the grindstone and just kind of doing her studies and sticking with that. You know, so I don't know. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with COVID, but, you know, in the pandemic that we've experienced, the one thing that I did know is that it's been great to have them closer. I mean, we got a whole summer with them that I didn't think that we were going to get, especially before Celia left for college, because she was supposed to be working at a summer camp. And when that job got taken away, she was home. So,
in some weird way, it was a blessing that you had them closer. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Well, I know that I had kind of tumultuous years with my parents. I wasn't really a rebellious teenager myself. But I, you know, I had a temper on me for sure. I still do. I'm a very passionate kind of person. And my mom is not a yogi at all, but I just remember her, you know, saying that before you answer, take a deep breath. And I just remember, you know, as a yoga teacher, relating to the passions of the teenage years of just how that simple cue of just take a deep breath so your emotions has time to settle. Did any of your yoga teacher kind of your cues to your students, did it weave it into your you know, parenting?
Well, having presence of mind is obviously, you know, very important. You know, one of the things that I often think about is especially when Celia got to be, you know, senior in high school and things like that. I mean, just life was busy. I mean, they're still actually really busy. But it's the type of thing where, you know, just, you know, being present to what's going on and being able to listen and kind of get in their space as much as you can, even though those moments tend to be fleeting. I mean, I think about yoga, you know, obviously we talk about being present in the moment. And with all the distractions and things like that, it's kind of hard to do. I often tell people about picking your battles. I mean, you kind of got to just say, you know, what are those boundaries going to be? And sometimes, especially as kids get older, they get a little bit looser. But there were some things that we were really tried to do is just say, okay, when dinner time comes around, the phones get put away and we all, you know, enjoy each other's company. And so those are the types of things. And so it's not necessarily the yoga, but it's more of the mindfulness and the presence of that and just being able to be in their space and understand what's going on and what's important to them and being able to connect with them at that level, you know, well, which is...
I think that is yoga philosophy, you know, being able to hold someone else and also holding space with emotional intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. So you're holding space mindfully for them without expectations and all of those things that so often, you know, even adult conversations just kind of go whoom, way down the tube because it's just not a productive way of being present.
Yeah. So, and I've been impressed too, because sometimes, especially, you know, this is the thing, especially with kids, you know, I always say they tend to reflect you. It's like, they tend to take on your strengths, but also some of the things that, you know, me, I need to work on are directly reflected, you know, and I will get into an argument with one of them and be like, where'd they learn that? Oh, they learned that I do that. I do that when I get upset. Okay. But we've actually gotten pretty good at just being able to wind ourselves down too. And also find when it's like, oh, we get spun up about something. You take the 15 minute timeout, let the brain settle. And then you come back and you're like, okay, you know what? This is where I really screwed that up. And then you're back at it. So. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. What do you find the most rewarding when in this period?
You know, the thing that I love about teenagers in particular is that they've become their own people. I mean, you know, I talk about, you know, one of the things, if you're familiar with Myers-Briggs, I'm ISTJ. Cyprus is ENFP, 100% opposite from me. And I think if you tested her sister, and I'm not quite sure what she is, but she's definitely introverted, but they're just completely different kids. And you get to a point where they are who they are, and I kind of talk about, it's like, well, now we're just kind of putting up the guardrails and just, you know, trying to save them from themselves. But I think the thing that's most interesting, and, you know, and I kind of think about Cypress in particular, she is, the education that they both got, you know, I grew up in a very conservative Midwestern public high school, you know, and so, you know, things were kind of drilled into my head in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so now we're in Seattle and they're, you know, they're going to, you know, different schools and they're getting taught different things. I actually learned so much from them. I mean, just a ton about some of the struggles and the things like that. And they have the presence of mind and they get to the point where it's clear that they're learning things that I was never taught. And they're also experiencing things that I was never taught. You know, I kind of related to some of the challenges earlier about not having, you know, not having to worry about a lot of these things, but they get exposed to it, but they're able to make their own decisions. And I learn a lot from them. And that part is super fun, because the other thing about is when kids learn something that their parents don't know, they love to share it and they love to be the teacher. And, you know, if you've got the presence of mind as a parent to be able to listen to some of those lessons, it kind of blows my mind. So it's very exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I had a relative, you know, I'm from Hungary. Mm-hmm. The educational system is completely different. But my relative was constantly saying that, you know, at 18, you just have so much in your head because you're coming out from just learning all these subjects and you're preparing for this grand examination at the end of high school that American system doesn't have. And so the kids are under a lot of pressure to study and learn and read all these things. And she was always just marveled and loved to talk to teenagers as well, because all the knowledge was just so like on top of their tongue, right? And
fresh.
It's really, I think sometimes as we age, we lose the enthusiasm for knowledge. You know, we get into the grindstone, we get into our routines, we get stuck at work and so forth. And we're just not so open to all the information and all the beauty and all the knowledge that's out there in the universe. And I think high school and college years are really beautiful exactly for that, because it reminds us of just like, oh my God, there's so much fun stuff out there. So
oh, yeah, it's thrilling. It's really thrilling to see. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
thanks for sharing it. Well, you know, our short time is kind of wrapping up. But this is a perfect finish question for you, of like, just to get to know you a little better. What makes you really un-yogic? You know, what
oh my gosh,
makes you off the keel?
You know, I saw that when we were first kind of sharing this, and I think it'd be easier to make a list of things that make me yogic. so I think, you know, I've been getting really good at losing things lately. dumb mistakes that I make on my own, strangely enough. I mean, I kind of get spun up at some of the weirdest things. They really do. I lost my car keys the other day for like 2 hours. I found them in the trunk of my car. How they ended up there, I have no idea.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
But I had the presence of mind to know. So it's like, okay, where was I the last time I had them? Oh yeah, I was looking at the thing. Got it. So sometimes things like that'll happen. Questioning my integrity. I kind of run up with that every now and then. Mostly in a work and environment and kind of situation. Yeah. Sometimes with dealing with authority figures is kind of like, I don't need to answer this question again. I've already answered it. And this sounds really, really petty, and I apologize, but things like that. I don't get road rage anymore.
And then when these things happen, do you tend to go introvert or do you go,
it's mostly go introvert.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of
had a suspicion you were the introvert kind.
I kind of clam up and just kind of get withdrawn and but it doesn't, you know.
How do you shake yourself out of that? You know, what is the practice?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, so I started, after my hip surgery, I actually started meditating regularly. Mm-hmm. And then I really, then I kind of fell off a little bit. But over the summer, I think it was kind of like in the depths of COVID, I actually picked it up again. And I was kind of thinking of it this way. It's like the time to start meditating, and I kind of, I do use meditation as a way of kind of calming myself, but I don't like, I get upset and then I meditate. It's like, we talk about developing a practice, and it's kind of like, you know, this is why pilots train in simulators, right? They simulate something goes wrong in a controlled environment. So I get up first, my morning routine, I get up first thing in the morning, I pour myself a cup of coffee, I sit on my couch and I meditate for 20 minutes because that's when my mind is generally pretty clear. But it also, you know, before I've had a chance to get myself spun up for the day, that practice of, you know, kind of, you know, being present to your thoughts, being the observer, trying to, you know, let the, I remember in 40 days, I still use the visualization of putting something on a leaf and watching it float down the river. It's one of my favorites. That is the time. And so then I think it kind of trains your mind.
Yeah.
And then, so that allows somebody to say, oh, I got spun up at that thing. You know, and I realize sometimes like I have a really weird relationship with scarcity and a lot of things. Like, you know, I hate losing things. I hate seeing spoiled food. I, you know, stuff like that comes up. Those are the things that get me spun up. But now I know that I kind of have this weird scarcity.
That's my it.
Exactly. And so then that kind of helps me kind of figure that. But I've had the background now. I've been, you know, meditating, and I'm no means an expert, but I've been doing it long enough to where I can start to recognize some of those triggers and I can step back and just say, oh, I'm doing that thing again.
Yeah. So, isn't that the beauty of meditation? It's not that it makes us perfect. It just allows us to correct ourselves faster.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, this has been lovely. Closing silly questions from Spira. Just one.
Okay.
What is the weirdest thing you ever eaten in your life?
I'm usually pretty conservative about strange things. I did eat fried alligator once. And then there was also, when we were vacationing in Thailand, Kimberly convinced me to go to some roadside thing and actually get curry in Phuket. And nothing bad happened with it, but it was extraordinarily hot. And of course you couldn't really drink the water. So I mean, I left sweating. And so it wasn't necessarily weird to anybody living in Thailand, but for me, it was. So.
And watching you go through the torture of it.
Watch me go through the hard part, yes.
I can sympathize with that. I don't have a lot of tolerance for spicy food either.
Well, it wasn't, you know, I didn't ask for it to be spicy. It's just kind of how they served it.
So. Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and hopefully we'll see you soon again with maybe some other subjects. So,
all right. I look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
All right.